Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Footmarks episode. I'm your host, Varun Alvakonda, and I'm joined by Jared Kimba, who you may have heard
Hello.
Of, since it's his channel and everything. So Jared has recently done a piece on the cricket's mixtape era, which is essentially on selection. So Jared, cricket used to be quite shit when it comes to selection in the fact that it was quite amateurish. So why don't you tell us a bit about Merv Hughes and his selection nonsense surrounding him?
Yeah, that was one of my favorite ones. I'm trying to remember the full details. I think it was Chloe Sartor who interviewed him about it. And it was like, he was getting a bit of flack. And it was just at that point, right, where I'd have to go back and check the years, but it was probably between, let's say, 2009 and 2013 when he was a selector. And it was just at that point where cricket's getting quite professional, right? Like, you know, because selectors were amateur up until then. That was really when we first started getting professional stuff. And so people were kind of expecting the most. And like Merv Hughes just like put a pin in everyone's, like, you know, collective brain and just was like, yeah, but I don't watch cricket on TV. You can't learn it. I think his exact lines were something along the line of, you don't learn anything from watching on TV. And so what do you know about Merv Hughes?
I know he has a mustache and I know he's a decent bowler.
So
I know he's worn his like mates. I know that I know.
Yeah, so he was, I think it's fair to say, a partier, right? Like, very much famous for partying and enjoying himself and, you know, being a funny guy and all these sorts of things. So it was a weird, you can imagine, it was already a bit of a weird thing to make him a selector in that situation. Yeah. But then when he retired, what he does, Varun, and there's a few Australian cricketers who've done this and a few English cricketers who do this. His main job when he retired was going on tours as, like, the guy in charge of tours. So like I've stayed in hotels and like you go down to breakfast and Merv is there having a chat to you. And it's just like everyone around him is, you know, on whatever tour that he was working for. Right. Now, if you're that kind of person, you can imagine a large part of your job is drinking and, you know, looking after people on the tour. Remember Mark Butcher did a tour once. I'm not sure he ever did another one afterwards because he did a tour and one of the people on the tour had a breakdown and Butch did not handle that brilliantly. And like, you know, that's just not how Butch wants to be dealing with his days. But people like Merv and Keith Stackpole and Don Topley, Reece Topley's dad, they're like machines. They go on these tours and you'll be at some random like resort somewhere and they'll just swan up to you and start chatting to you about something. And so Merv, when he's touring with the Australian team, is quite often involved in these tours, right? Where he's making sure that the woman with the bad hip can get on and on the bus every day. It's not like he's concentrating on the cricket properly. And then Cricket Australia weren't sending him around the country all that much, right? As I said, it was an amateur era. So you've got a selector who is got a second day job at the ground, at best. At worst, he's had a couple of beers in him all the time and then isn't watching any cricket on TV. And he's deciding on whether, you know, Matt Hayden should continue his career, right? Or, you know, whether it's time to make Michael Clarke the captain or whatever the big decisions that Merv had to make. And you're like, how is this okay? And this is really recent, as we're talking about. And so if you go back in history, it's mad. I remember talking to this guy who played county cricket. And he was let go by the county. And he said the guys who let him go were the guys on the board because they decided who got the contracts the next year. And he's like, half of these guys didn't even see me play. Like, they didn't even come to the games. And they're deciding whether I have a future. And then, of course, you go back. We did this good podcast with Wigmore the other day where we're talking about how crazy early selection is. Like, how so, you know, the West Indies just being like, we're going to have a different captain for every venue. And, like, in England, literally the home ground just going, well, this player plays well here and this player doesn't play well here. So we're not selecting that really good player. That's how crazy the sport has been all the way through. Like, it, you know, it's only, was Australia, I think Australia was the first ones ever to have a paid selector. And I think that was Trevor Hone. Was it Trevor Hones? Or was it the other guy? It was one of the Australian, Trevor Hones came back as a paid selector. And the selector before him, Andrew Hildrich, he was a full-time lawyer running his own legal practice and was also Australia's chairman of selectors. How can you possibly be deciding on those things? And it was really common. You see it right across all cricket. This is a really common thing of these random ex-players, like not even being able to see any cricket. Like I remember someone saying to me, oh, it's a disgrace. Inzamam Ul Haq is the selector and he never watches first-class cricket. And I was like, you're assuming that other selectors are watching first-class cricket though in that scenario. So that's where we were. Varun, it was not particularly a good place to be.
Yeah, so you're essentially, like, to summarize it up, it was a clusterfuck, essentially how we put it, right?
I think that is absolutely the perfect way of doing it. I think it's probably the last bit of amateurism that really was still dominating professional parts of the game. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, almost everything else is filtered mm-hmm. out by the mid-2000s. For whatever reason, there are still international teams that are selected by amateur selectors right now. Like, that still is a thing mm-hmm. that happens. It hasn't completely died yet.
Yeah, I think PC Pakistan, I don't even know who the selector is at this point. Like,
no one knows who Pakistan's selectors are, least of all themselves.
Like, yeah. Do they know? So we're talking about how it used to be a mess. So would you say that England were kind of like, so you're saying that Australia were the first team to have a paid selector, but like yep. England essentially were the first to have like a network of scouts, which weirdly use common sense, where they're like, a wicketkeeper actually goes to look at wicketkeepers, fast bowlers for fast bowlers. Something which yep. on paper seems like a very common sense decision, but it took close to a century for cricket to actually work it out.
Yeah, I remember, I can't remember which country it was, but I remember talking to a couple of selectors from a country just randomly at a bar somewhere. And you know, we were talking about selection and they were like, I was like, you know, I'm not going to run this or anything, but like, what's your biggest mistake? And they were like, wicketkeepers. And they didn't even say a particular wicketkeeper. They said wicketkeepers. And I went, what do you mean? And they said, well, it was only later on that we realized that like we would get contacts from our mates going, why have you picked this wicketkeeper? He can't keep. And they'd be like, oh yeah, but you know, he makes run. And then they started realizing that they didn't even really know who the best wicketkeepers were. And as you said, that was when I first heard of it with England was, trying to think, there was a couple of people who did it, but I think their wicketkeeping coach, which was Bruce French, was part of it. But then they had another wicketkeeper as well, whose name I should remember, but you know, not a massively well-known cricketer, but someone who played a lot of county cricket. They started sending them out. And then have you ever come across Mike Hendrick in any of your stats work before? 1970s bowler.
Very familiar name. Definitely yeah. a familiar name. Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of those bowlers who took a lot of wickets but never took like 5-wicket hauls, so he doesn't quite pop the way that some other bowlers might have. But I remember talking to Mike Hendrick and he told me that, yeah, his job was to go out and rate the seam bowlers. So he would be sent to a ground to look at Jamie Porter or to look at Mark Davies or to look at, you know, Josh Tung or whoever. Josh Tung might be a little bit – he might have stopped doing it by that. Sadly, he's passed on, Mike. Recently, but he was telling me that was his job. He wasn't sent there to watch the cricket. He was literally sent there to take notes on the fast bowler to bring back to the analysts and the selectors and the coaches so that they had an expert running their eye over these players. And again, as you said, it just makes sense, doesn't it? Like, we're not, obviously you can't have like a spin selector and a pace selector and a keeping selector and all this. But what you should be doing is filtering information from experts in all of those fields back into your selection. And before, what would happen is what I said earlier, which is you'd select a wicketkeeper and then all your mates would be like, have you seen this guy keep? He can't keep. Why are you picking him? Right. And so now, you know, the idea is that you have a scout, you have knowledge on them. They might still be wrong, but at least they're doing it from a position of strength. So that's changed quite a bit. And that's still pretty rare in cricket. It's still the vast majority of international countries. Either the coach or the captain has a say or the selectors have a say. And if you don't have the right people around, you're still missing out.
Yeah. Also, like, even from like a data point of view, like having more information only just helps you, doesn't it? Because, Okay. Because like we've seen it before. Sometimes you're like, this player's numbers are very good, but you watch them, they're like, it just doesn't add up. They like, you don't feel comfortable. Whereas on the other hand, like maybe another player might be, looks quite good, but isn't there quite in terms of numbers. So you have to, it is quite important to find the right balance between vibes and like numerical based selection, isn't it?
No, exactly. And you know, it comes down to professionalism, right? Like, it's like when I'm working for a team with analysis, they're like, oh, you're the numbers guy. And I'm like, it's not about numbers. It's about information, right? I'm trying to get as much information on something as possible and then look for, you know, patterns or clues or anything that we can find from that can help your cricket team. And that's kind of what you are trying to do in that situation. So when I'm looking at video, or even if I'm looking at data, I will try and get a former player to have a look at something with me, because they're going to see it in a slightly different way and that gives me more information on it. So again, it is how professional sporting teams should be picked. It is not always how things are made.
Yeah, so England kind of starts scouting, but because of franchise league, it's almost just been taken to a different level now, isn't it? With IPL, they aren't just looking at the major centres anymore. They're going to depths of India, like going to like maybe like villages on all of that, something that isn't even considering let's say, the secondary leagues that are running in India, for example, like the Delhi Premier League and things like that. So there's scouts on top of scouts right now, right? Would you say essentially revolutionized, like, what cricket scouting and selection?
Yeah, definitely. I think we started to see that. Was it, who is the Pakistan fast bowler who, Harris Ruff, who started with Melbourne Stars? And that came from a tip. I think the original tip was in Pakistan.
I think Lahore Qalandars have an academy for it, I think. And he was one of those.
But like I know there was like a tip from someone in Pakistan to someone in Australia saying that this guy could bowl. And maybe he was playing club cricket or something, or something had happened. And if it wasn't Harris Ruff, it was another a Pakistani bowler. But I know there was someone who started with either Hobart or Melbourne. And it was all based on this scouting network. I remember hearing the story of it at the time of, you know, someone messaging someone else. So we're starting to get that. WhatsApp has changed things quite a bit. Right. Mm-hmm. Just the ability to send informational clips to people. In the old days, it's like you might, let's say someone was coaching a franchise in 2008 or 9. A lot of those coaches wouldn't have been on WhatsApp at that point. Right. Like it sounds silly, but so cricket's first WhatsApp wasn't WhatsApp. It was BBM Messenger, but not all old coaches had Blackberries. Right. Even in 2009, not everyone used WhatsApp. So as WhatsApp comes in, it allows those sorts of people to be able to send information to people very, very easily and quickly. So that plays a part. And so, yeah, you end up with, there's probably a couple of different versions of scouts. So one is the sort of, there are all these people who just watch the Tamil Nadu League, the Karnataka League, the league in Delhi, you know, all those sorts of, that level of cricket. And they will also watch second, you know, the Baby Bash in Australia, you know, the other T20 leagues in other parts of the world as well. And then you've got proper scouts. So the first team, the first international scout that I'm aware of was Darren Berry when he was coaching Rajasthan. They just said, we'll pay for you to go to India and just go from town to town and just go to net sessions, right? And see what you can find. And then I think, you might correct me, but I think John Wright's the first person I know of who was a big name person who had the name scout next to his title. And was it John Wright who found Bumrah? Does that sound right?
I think he found Bumrah. He might have found Hardik as well, I think. Yeah.
So at that stage, how does not every cricket team in the world not have a scout from then on in, right? Like John Wright, obviously a brilliant man, but don't get me wrong, he found these people because he was looking for them, right? Mm. And so, you know, when I've talked to franchises, like I that's what I say, let's start with the scouting network. And they're like, we know all the players. And I was like, you don't know all the players. Like, this is not how it works. You know, when I was in Scotland, I was like, okay, so let's say of your top 15 players, you'll know a lot about them. Of the next 15 players, can you tell me which one has this slower ball and which one is, you know, releases the ball at this length? You know, just simple things that you need to know. And that's what a scouting network helps you put together. So, yeah, I think through the IPL that we sort of seen that, and there have been some people that I've heard of who are sort of independent scouts who don't actually work for one team, but they will give information and they'll do short-term contracts or, you know, whatever that may be. So there's a bit of a network there, but it's, you know, it's nowhere near the level it should be, right? Like it's not actually that expensive a thing. Travel is obviously involved, but if you're a CPL team, right, or an SA20 team, it shouldn't cost you that much money to have a scout go out and actually have a look at all this cricket for you, even if it's just on contract work. But it's just not part of cricket. And so we're still getting to the point now where we've almost skipped, have you seen Moneyball?
I've seen clips of it.
Yeah.
So I know what you're talking about.
Of course, yeah. So Moneyball, the whole thing of Moneyball is that it's analysts versus scouts, right? Whereas that's the wrong way to look at it to begin with. But in cricket, the analysts have skipped the scouts. And so we actually need to go back a step and be like, no, we need people out there feeding back information of, you know, how much this guy trains, right? How they're preparing, what their diet is like. That's all those sorts of things that scouts will have a look at, right? You know, is the kid like? Are the kid's parents, you know, really well-grounded? Or are the kids just, is the kid just a meal ticket for their parents? All those sorts of things that scouts are very good at getting on top of the cricket stuff, right? Okay, so in this situation, his numbers look great, but every time I've seen him when he's faced someone over 85 miles an hour, he can't hit the ball, right? Like something as simple as that. Those are the sorts of things that scouts really help with. And so cricket is definitely missing that. Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumpa turned the Nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
Yeah, the other thing is that obviously one of our partners is NV Play, right? Which just gives you the opportunity to be anywhere in the world and just watch any clips of anyone, right? Which wasn't a thing in the past. Just like with what you said about WhatsApp, that anyone can communicate. If I really wanted to right now, I could have watched a bowler and then I say, oh, this guy's really good, and I could send you the video clip, right?
Exactly.
And it just isn't possible before.
And if you really want to see that, I think the MV Play, the county stuff is public, isn't it? And I think you can go to their public site and just, because I don't think it comes up on our private MV Play membership. I think it's on the public one that I found it. So I looked at like 500 balls of Sam Cook before he played his first test, right? And I found Kyle Jameson probably through MV Play. I'm trying to think. So Kyle Jameson, I saw him in the stats and he just had these ridiculous power play numbers. And I was like, who's this guy? And then I found highlights and I was like, he looks freakishly tall. And then a friend had an NMP Play membership and I went and I found some stuff on Kyle Jameson. And I could, and I did. And I sent it to agents going, this is who, you guys are always asking me who I would sign next. This is who I would sign. This guy's going to be worth, you know, millions of dollars in the next couple of years. If you sign him now, you can, you know, some teams can get him quite cheap and you will look like a genius. And I didn't know how good Kyle Jameson was going to be, but I knew he could bat a little bit and he was 19 foot tall, right? And was very good in the power play. So that ability to be able to send that stuff off to people. I remember, you know, when I was working with teams, you would just get a WhatsApp and it would be like 15 balls from this random leg spinner in Nepal, right? It would be like a left arm fast bowler from Afghanistan, right? It would, all these random cricketers that, in the old days, people wouldn't have even been able to find them. And because of WhatsApp, it's that ability to feed that information through in real time. And suddenly it becomes like a very, very interesting, fast-moving process. But as I kind of talk about in the piece, it's not exactly foolproof. And if you're just looking at people's highlights, you're kind of missing all the other things.
Yeah, so I think that's how Ben Stokes finds Shoaib Bashir, right? He's like, oh, this guy's bowled really well. Like, why don't we just look at him? Which is the other part of cricket selection, is like using Hawkeye data or CricQuiz to aid selection, which is almost in a way like, it makes, like, it's a bit weird how long it does take to do that. Because if you already have the Hawkeye data, could you not just be like, okay, who's the best players of seam bowling? Who are the best players of high spin? Who are the best players of high pace, right? It should probably be used by that. But I would not have imagined, like, okay, Shoaib Bashir has got really high release points and Indian spinners have high release points, so therefore he must do well in India. Yeah. So it does just feel like we just entered this whole new realm of possibility.
Yeah, and I also think in the Shoaib Bashir thing, if he does, like, his best ball is dramatic, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Is it the one, remember that wicket he got against Zimbabwe where it, like, pitches on leg stump and rips across? Like, Shoaib Bashir's best ball is really dramatic. And so you can imagine that, you know, poor Ben Stokes is doom scrolling. And I don't even know if he found it on NV Play or if he found it on Instagram. I think it was on Instagram, someone told me, but yeah, I haven't
probably
checked. Yeah, I think that was where he found it. In fact, if the county cricket Instagram account is really cool. If you just want to see great shots and incredible spells, and it really is one of the better ones out there. Like, I don't know if Vish has anything to do with it, but I've always felt like Vish was the one that sort of pushed all that sort of stuff of being like, really cool things happen in county cricket. We can put all this stuff online. And now ECB's all over it and is really good at that. But yeah, Ben Stokes finds this delivery. And then that's where you start the process. As you said, you then go, okay, well, maybe he does bowl a little bit faster than some of the other English spinners. And he's obviously a lot taller than other English spinners. How does that compare to the high release point of, you know, Ashwin and Akshar and Washington, right? And now you just like, okay, yeah, so we can match these guys up and see if they work and how they work and everything else. So you've got the big boom of the highlight, but if it stops at the highlight, I think you're probably making a mistake. Whereas in truth, if you're then matching it with all that other information, as you said before, now you're just like, well, we can find any cricketer performing something and be like, well, that's eye-catching. Can we break down why this works and whether we can make it work at the top level? And what happened before, and you know, a big reason I wrote this piece was the Stephen Finn article about it, right? Where Stephen Finn was like, in the old days, you would start the season, you're like, you're trying to string a bunch of good spells together, then a bunch of good games together and everything. And then if you've done enough of that together, you can be the third seamer behind Jimmy and Broad, right? And now that's not how England look at it anymore, is it? Right? We know that for a fact. You know, they went with Sam Cook, but they took a long time to ever give Sam Cook a game. But they're just as happy to, you know, look at some of these other guys with no first class information behind them, right? Like, and just take a punt based on, okay, well, this guy's tall, or, you know, in Josh Tung's case, I think it's the pace and the action and the way the ball comes back into
I think Josh Hull was picked because he's a good farming stock.
Yeah, and you know, you need good farmers.
Exact words from Brendan McCullum.
but you know, they are looking for those kinds of things. Like, Matthew Potts was picked on the back of the fact that they'd heard he had a wobble ball, and and the year before he hadn't had a wobble ball, and suddenly he looked like a better bowler. So off we go, right? Like, that's the change that we are seeing. And if you can match that with the information or the data, it makes a lot more sense. So it's not just that it's a highlight package of Josh Tung roughing up some people on Instagram, right? It's now, okay, well, let's break this down and see how he did this.
Yeah, so like, I think we can all agree that the cricket selection was a bit flawed in that, like, just picking the best first class performers doesn't always make sense, because we know that the bowlers that do well in England might be different to the bowlers that will do well in Australia. It's different to the bowlers that will do well in India, right? But like, surely there's a good balancing point between that and being just picking Bashir because he has a high release point and Josh Hill because he has a nice ass. Like, there has to be a good balance of things, right? Like, what point of, like, surely as a cricket society, we can find a good balance between the old way of selection and just being like the new way of selection.
Yeah. And I said, that's why, go back to that, my Moneyball point before, where we're not quite ready for that yet, are we? And it's because we skipped an entire step, right? we had no general managers, right? We had no professional structure of selection at all. And then suddenly we had Prasanna and Nathan Lehman, right? So we completely skipped all the other things that you should need along the way. And so what we are trying to do now, Byron, is trying to find a balance between all these things. And it's also, you know, it's a very different society that we're in now. Whereas in the old days, you would have James Hildreth, right? Hildreth, yeah. Playing for Somerset. And all the Somerset fans going absolutely nuts over him, and them going, oh, you know, there's a bias against him because he's not from a big team and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, in those days, the England selectors, all they have to do is ignore one county, right?
Yeah.
A James Hildreth coming through now, everyone will be able to see all these shots online, right? He's not hidden anymore, but that you have to see him live. And so the selectors are actually under a different kind of pressure than they've ever been under before, because generally before it was just the location, you know, the Victorian selectors want Dean Jones in the side and the Somerset selectors want that. And Mumbai, you know, Mumbai wants this. And now it's like some random kid from nowhere suddenly has this huge fan base online, right? Not just because his local area watching, but because people are looking at first class numbers. They're seeing footage of this guy, you know. They might have watched a whole live stream of someone making a triple 100. They're going to have a personal connection with them. And so that is going to affect selectors. And so selectors have to be in a situation now where they actually have to find a new level of professionalism, as you said before. They have to actually work out what works, how scouting works, how selection works, how video works, how analysis works, and bring it all together. And the argument at the moment is that probably, I think we would all argue, England have gone just a tad too vibes based of recent times, right? And they've probably gone away from just the core strengths, you know, of there's a lot of smart people that work in cricket. Like, you know, we make fun of the systems a lot. The people are not dumb. It's just that these smart people in dumb systems usually give you dumb results, right? Yeah. And so I think that's what we have to find out with the cricket is how to handle this new social media presence of people watching these kids come through. Mm-hmm. Like, remember when Brevis came through? Like, my God, in fact, every comment on any of our YouTube page, why are you talking about Brevis? You should be talking about Brevis. And I was like, because he's not a developed player yet. I can tell that he's like 2 or 3 years off. No one wanted to hear that, right?
Because also, can we just say baby AB is just so redundant because baby has AB in the name?
Also, like,
He should either be called Babraham de Villiers or Baby de Villiers.
So I come from an era where everyone was the new McGrath or Baby Shaq, right? And no one ever became Shaq again, and no one has actually become McGrath since. Like, I just think if you, that it doesn't work.
I think perfectly. If you take good parts of Cummins and good parts of Hazelwood, you kind of get a McGrath somewhere.
Yeah, if you take two other great players and put them together, so
you get one McGrath roughly.
Yeah. So I do think that there is an element of like there's going to be more press and more stress on those sorts of things. Whereas before, you know, this, there's always someone in India who's averaging 55 in first class.
Yeah.
Cricket, right. And
someone is always hard done by.
do you know who Nikita Miller is?
I don't believe I do.
So Nikita Miller, I'm just want to see how many test matches he played. It can't have been many. He played one test. Is that right? Oh my God. He played one test, Nikita Miller. He played 100 first class games. In those 100 first class games, he took 538 wickets at 16. Right? So he's a Jamaican left arm bowler. He played a lot of one day cricket. He's very hard to hit in one day cricket, but didn't take many wickets. I just don't know if it's as easy to have Nikita Millers in the future, because now everyone would just be sharing clips of Nikita Miller just like taking 7 for 40, right? Wait, let's see what his best figures are in first class cricket. 9 for 41 with 30. So he played 100 first class games with 35 five wicket hauls and 12 10 wicket hauls. So every 10 first class games, he took a 10 for, right? I think that's actually much higher. And this is only a couple of years ago. He probably he's only 43 now, so he wouldn't have retired that long ago. But I actually think that's a lot harder now because we have the ability to share clips of these guys online. People have access to first-class stats in a way that no one has ever had before, right? You talk about, you know, things like MV Play and the Instagram, you know, accounts and all this sort of stuff. So the fans are now much more educated. This whole era, actually, Byron, reminds me of when I first got into cricket writing. When the journalists suddenly realized that the fans actually knew a lot, right? And you saw them, they came to Twitter and they, because when you write for a newspaper, you're the voice of God, right? You write it, maybe you get a letter that comes to you 3 weeks later complaining about a slight mistake, whatever. Or I watched all those cricket writers, especially ones from the UK and Australia, go online and go on Twitter and be fact checked in real time. And their worlds change. And we're seeing a similar thing now with selection, right? We're seeing a similar thing. When a selector says something dumb now, right, it goes through everyone's WhatsApp groups, right? We all get this thing of like, you know, if Ajit Agarkar slips up at a press conference, in the old days, the only person who was pulling selectors up for stuff like that was me on Cricket with Balls, because no one else was even, you know, it was just newspaper writers would just print it verbatim because they just had a 400-word column that they didn't care that much about, right? So this whole generation of me's now exist. And so not only do the selectors have to understand where to balance vibes and data and scouting and professionalism, they also have to deal with the fact that some kid out there has watched every fucking county game that they can. They've probably got like five screens going at once. And they've got all these notes on players that the selectors don't even have.
Also, like, different opinions are, because like I, for example, hate anchors in T20 cricket. Like, not every selector
thinks
that way,
right? You've never mentioned
that
before. Yeah, not publicly. I've got a really angry message from someone the other day because you did a podcast, and on the podcast you said something along the lines of, I can't respect this team because they've got too many anchors. I think you were talking about Gujarat or something. And this person took it really seriously. You know, I don't think that's the sort of analysis. And I'm just like, I don't think he was quite giving you 100% his that was Varun's vibes.
Yeah. So also, like, with cricket selection, Jared, I do think we're like, it's a bit more specialized in a way. I don't think it used to be, because we're not just looking at for tests, for example, right? It's not like, who are the five best batters in the country? It's, we want a number five who can counter attack. We need an opener who can attack. We want someone who can bat dead bat. Like, even with bowling, it's like, we want a stock bowler. We want a first change bowler who can bowl bounces, right? In a way, so that does, it's like more limited and more like the pool is expanded in at the same time. Like, and
that's
just
that's a really good point. I think if you talk to the old captains, they would often say that, and they would say, this guy's in the team for this and this guy's in the team for that. But I think you're right. I think the way the selectors did it was more, this is the best team, and then the captain has to make the team work from there. Whereas, you know, you are seeing people now go, okay, so we need, I would say throughout the history of cricket, Byron, maybe the biggest mistake that teams made consistently was never picking first change bowlers. Everyone always picked new ball bowlers, right? And so you end up with three or four seamers in the side and they all need the new ball. And then you're just like, I don't understand why we can't get wickets after the 25th over. It's like, well, you don't have the right side. And so teams are getting to that. And also when you're on your speciality stuff as well, white ball teams were quite generically put together up until very recently, right? And now you're starting to see people like Luke Wright, who, you know, was a fantastic T20 player himself. You know, I've only met him like once or twice, but I know I remember him showing me random clips. He might not even remember meeting me, but we're in like a breakfast bar or somewhere in Melbourne when he was playing for the Stars, and he was showing me random clips of some cricket. He hadn't even introduced himself. We'd never actually, I don't even know if it shook hands. He was literally showing me something on his phone because it was really cool and someone had played some incredible shot. Like Luke Wright is that dude, right? Like he's interesting. That's the kind of person you want. Whereas a lot of the selectors that were doing white ball cricket before didn't like white ball cricket, or when they played, didn't take it seriously. Right.
So, yeah, for example, like the India used to have Rahul Dravid as a finisher. What the hell was Rahul Dravid doing finishing in an ODI?
And think about the people who were picking that side. They played white ball cricket when it wasn't professional. Like it's very, and if you had people from the 70s picking white ball cricket, they wouldn't even have played white ball cricket. They would have played the red ball version of white ball cricket.
On top of that, India is just more conservative in nature in who they pick, right? On top of all of that.
Yeah. So you know, I think you're right. That sort of special, and that goes back to the scouting we're talking about before us, right? Mm-hmm. That more speciality that we're getting towards. And it's really important because cricket is a individual game that is also a team sport, right? It has that constant combination of those two things coming together. So you can't just pick the six best batters and the four best bowlers without understanding how they fit together, because it doesn't work that way. And again, I think probably captains and coaches and all that sort of stuff being involved with, even if they're not always on the panel, and that can cause issues as well, but having them involved in the process means that I remember, you know, dealing with Scotland and having, you know, Kyle in the room and having the chats, we could actually feed back information to him in real time of like, this is why we're thinking of doing this, but we need to know your thoughts on these two players before we commit to anything, because otherwise we're going to pick them and you're going to say, that's not what you need, right? So we need to know that. So even if he's not actually one of the selectors, and sometimes they are and sometimes they're not, a captain is going to give you real-time feedback of, yeah, so the issue here is this guy doesn't want to bowl to left-handers, right? Or doesn't want to bowl around the wicket or whatever that may be. So you know, all that information is really important.
Yeah, so also like the one thing I do think the old style of play was better is I miss the graduate position, which is the number six one.
Yeah.
But like part of that is because teams are regularly playing five bowlers now. So you essentially have lost the batting spot to experiment, right? Because you can't have a rookie batter at number five anymore.
Who's the last graduate player?
Oh, it's a good question. Is it just the
Virat Kohli? I know who I think it is. I think it's Asad Shafiq. And then they waited.
He's just
too
a potential forever graduate player, isn't he?
Yeah, and then they never moved him up the order. And by the time they did, they realized he maybe wasn't, you know, I think they waited too long to move him up the order, which is a problem with that position. I'm trying to think of anyone else. So yeah, we think about, as you say, I think having back-to-back tests means five bowlers is way more important. Like if you look at West Indies and Australia, those two teams dominated with four bowlers. I'm not sure how many teams in the future will dominate with just four bowlers anymore, because the ability to play back-to-back tests is so important. And so again, that's something that you need to know, right? Like, I remember a selector moaning that teams don't enforce the follow-on anymore. And I was like, aren't they not enforcing the follow-on because they don't want to tie their bowlers out for the next match? And he, in his era, there was always like 2 or 3 weeks between test matches. And he just hadn't thought about it. Not like he's an idiot or anything. But again, it's all those sort of things make a big difference.
But I do think batters are idiots, but that's a different podcast. But yeah.
that was Varun's vibes.
Yeah. All right, so where do you think test selection will just go towards right now? What's the future of it?
I have travelled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things: the phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it, and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny sims and get the one that does it all. Go to selly.com/goodareas and use the code goodareas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Selly. Yeah, so I do think that that sort of that, you know, we talked about it in the piece called calling it mixtape culture, which is obviously, you know, originally sort of from basketball and hip hop, and even before that, you know, people just making mixtapes for themselves. But I do think that that will play a big part in the future, because it allows you to see outliers really quickly, right? It really does. And so, you know, comparing Cook to Turner, you know, when England are looking at making decisions, in the old days, Cook is the guy that you're probably going to go with, or you go to Turner based purely on vibes, right? Like someone said something really good about him, you get him in the Nets, he looks good, and you bring him in. Now, someone like Turner, you can go and you can have a look at the speeds that he bowls, the release points, how he goes against right-handers and left-handers. And I think that's probably where the future should be. But I do think that fans and MV Play and Sports Mechanics and all these different companies that have access to all this are going to play a big part. So to go behind the curtain a little bit, one of the things I did for agents was make mixtapes, right? Because coaches can't see everything, Varun. And so you don't want them going on and just doing and typing your man's name into YouTube, because the first thing that might come up is them being dismissed, right? If you can send them a little mixtape of what they can do, and it's really important. Our team at Treon that produce all this for us, they do this now. I've stopped doing it, but they still do it. Women's cricket is another one where sometimes it's hard to find the highlights. So you can go through. So I do think that agents and managers and players need this. Coaches and selectors need the information, but what you have to understand is it can go too far. You can end up just getting hooked on the highlight, because what a highlight shows you is someone at their absolute best, whereas it's actually better to then match that with the data and then the Sports Mechanics or MV Play to go through every single ball and be like, oh, okay, so their best ball is here, but their worst ball is here, right? And as long as you know that, you can make an informed decision, right? You know, I was watching Mitchell Starc in the Nets yesterday. Mitchell Starc in the Nets was bowling full tosses. Like, it's Mitchell Starc, right? Like, as long as you know it's Mitchell Starc, you can make that. And I think it's about getting as much information as possible and not being swayed by the fact that, I don't know, 4 million people have watched this incredible highlights clip of this guy. You have to go back and still do the work. And I think that's the thing that we're really trying to talk about here is
also
matching
the other thing. The other thing is cross-format bias sometimes, right? Where it's like if you do really well in one format, people want you in every format. And then if you do bad in one format, everyone wants you out in every format, right? I think as much as I love Sai Sudarshan, I think he's a perfect example of it. Like, where his first-class numbers are not elite, but people are like, oh, he's got a fantastic on-drive in T20 cricket, so he must be great in England. And like, maybe it's not that simple. Like, I'm still not sold on the Sai Sudarshan hype train.
No, I completely understand that. He averages, what, 38 in first-class cricket?
I think it's 39, but he's like, he might have more hundreds than 50s that I remember.
Yeah, so his record's one of those really confusing ones. But you're right. I mean, that's the other thing is we saw a whole generation of, we haven't really seen that many white ball cricketers with bad red ball numbers make runs in test cricket, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if we have with bowlers. I'd have to go back and check with bowlers, but I don't think we have with bowlers
bowling,
either.
Like, I think it might just be every England bowler in the last 3 years.
So you look at Alex Hales and Jason Roy and Aaron Finch off the top of my head. There's one in Sri Lanka too that I've forgotten as well. There's a reason that they don't consistently make runs in red ball cricket, right? Which is different to say someone like David Warner. So people use the David Warner one for this and you're like, but if you have a look at David Warner, after 11 first class matches, he's averaging 50. So yes, he hadn't played a lot of first class cricket, but that's very different than Aaron Finch, who has played first class cricket for 10 years, has never made a run, and suddenly you're assuming this guy who nicks off in one day games is not going to nick off when we put the fielders there, right? So I do think there is an element of that, and that you and I talk about this a lot. That sort of cross format, pollination you and I can do a whole podcast on this as well, because it is fascinating. Because where the people who like Sai Sudarshan are also right, you cannot play an on drive as a left-hander specifically, with that level of balance and touch, and not be a top elite batter in all formats of the game. But that also doesn't mean that he's ready for test cricket because he can play that show, right? And so this sort of format leak is a really interesting one, and it will never go away. And that's the next challenge for the selectors, right? Because we're already seeing people get picked based on some other format, and you're like, okay, it doesn't seem to have worked, but you can understand why they might be like, it's worked here, so it should work here. But let me, if I may, present you with Joss Butler's test career, right? Like, none of us doubt that Joss Butler's really good, but he'd never made runs consistently in first-class cricket. And even though he played at his absolute peak in test cricket, he was still mid.
Yeah, and he was batting at 6 and 7. If they made him an opener, I'd at least understand it.
He was, not only was he batting at number 7, this is the second time I've said this today, they picked him as a specialist number 7. Varun, he's the last guy to be in the graduate position.
The ultimate graduate position.
I reckon Dean Jones started his career batting at number 7, and I think there's a couple of really good batters who have. So you talked about,
actually, I have a graduate. What about Nitish Kumar Reddy? He's basically was a specialist number 8 in the BGT, barely bowled.
All rounders are weird though, aren't they? Can they be graduates? I don't know if they can.
He might be, because if he didn't, but he doesn't bowl. If he bowled, I can at least understand it.
But he was there because he could bowl, even if he didn't bowl, which are two different things. I think to be a true graduate, you need to be... I think Asad Shafiq is a perfect example. He may never have graduated, but he's a perfect example of what a graduate player is, which is you come into the side, you bat number 6, and you get your feet set, and then you go to your normal position, which is what Ponting did, which is what Kohli did. Sachin does a very normal thing. Michael Clarke did it as well. I think he batted at 6 when he came in. Where did Sachin bat? Was he 5 or 6?
No, it was 6 when he starts. Then he becomes 5 and then 4, I think, eventually.
That's a whole other podcast that we could do another day, which is that position gone now? Because when you pick someone, you're picking them to bat a number now. Whereas in the old days, you weren't picking them to bat a number.
That's essentially the all-rounder now. Because you can have a rookie at 6. But you can't have a rookie at 5 now, can you? Because that's just not enough batting, because usually your all-rounder and wicketkeepers are limited, right? That's the assumption we're going with. The only way you can have a graduate is if you have a wicketkeeper is in the top 5 or an all-rounder is in the top 5. Both those things are very rare.
Have back-to-back tests ruined the follow-on and the number 6 specialist batting position?
I mean, they probably have, haven't they?
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, because the game has fundamentally changed from what it used to be, where you did it, you would have a special. We have to look this up now. I'm sorry. I know the podcast is finished and we've completely gone in a different direction, and Bayram's waiting to do another episode with it. But let's have a look. Last 5 years, right, in Test cricket, if we looked at just people who bat at number 6, I wonder how many specialist batters we would have in that position anymore. Where are we? Yeah, last 5 years.
So what did I say, Pat? Who would we have on top of the head? You'd have Jadeja briefly, Stokes.
Right. So he doesn't count. Punt. But both of those guys don't count because they have second keeper, skills.
Sorry, yeah.
Yep. Rizwan doesn't count.
Rizwan doesn't count again.
Yep. De Silva doesn't count. Blundell doesn't count. Green doesn't count. Litton Das, I've got 18 matches batting at number 6 as a specialist batter.
Is DDS a specialist batter, Jared?
How many wickets does he have?
I don't know, that's what I'm wondering.
I would say he was originally in the side because he gave them bowling. I'm not sure he still is in the side. And he's now moved up, hasn't he? He's taken
40
now?
Wickets in 63 tests. So
Litton Das, I wonder how many times Litton Das has kept in the games that he's batted at number 6.
Ollie Pope was keeping when he was at... No, I think actually, Jared, Ollie Pope, he was batting at 6 in South Africa.
So is that for one series?
No, I think he does. Does he bat at 5 versus India in 2021 as well? Yeah, no, I think Ollie Pope does start at 6, Jared. I don't think he was in the top 5.
I think you'll find Ollie Pope started as a number 3.
Oh, of course he does.
So what happened was everyone thought Ollie Pope was a number 4, 5, 6. But when he makes his debut, I'm pretty sure, I think he might never have even batted at number 3 for Surrey. Or if he had, he hadn't done it very often. I only remember this because Norcross kept saying that they were ruining him. So Litton Das played as a keeper. So I would say the only specialist number 6.
Now, Ollie Pope starts at 4 versus India.
Who was that?
Ollie Pope starts at 4 versus India for 3 innings, then he moves to 6 and 7.
Oh, maybe it was 4, not 3. Maybe I misremembered that.
I actually think he is a 4, to be fair. I just think he was too young.
He's probably a 5. The problem with him being a 4 or 5 is that he doesn't start well against spin. I've got the guy for you. There's one specialist number 6 in the last 5 years. Jermaine Blackwood.
Makes sense. Okay.
That's incredible, though, isn't it? Yeah. That's incredible that I'm assuming Varina has kept in most of his games. So he's keeping... So I think that's it. We have one specialist number six batter left in world cricket, and he doesn't play that much. He's played like 10 tests in 5 years.
Shayan and I were also looking at this. The number eight has become an all-rounder position as well, if you look at it in the last 5 years.
Yeah, and
you find very few specialist bowlers there.
Yeah. So the most in the last 5 years of test cricket, the most innings at number, I should say the most test matches at number six is Tom Blundell with 27. Mm. So no one has batted in the number six position more than 27 matches. So no, it's not even, so even the guys who are all-rounders are moving around, or the guys who are second skills are moving all around, which tells you that there's a much more flexibility now within that. I think I'm right in saying, doesn't Asad Shafiq have them? I don't know why this is the Asad Shafiq podcast.
Has Stokes not got more runs than him now?
At number six. Yes, yeah, so Asad Shafiq has the third most runs at six. Mm. Steve Waugh has the second most.
Ah,
and, so, VBS and yeah, you're right. Stokes is at the top. Stokes is way ahead at the top. Anyway, it's fascinating. I don't know how we got here.
All right. That's enough for this podcast, I think. Jared needs to rush. You and Bram need to do one as well. I don't know what that's on, but yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much for watching this. Do subscribe to goodareas.co. And yeah, just see you later. I'm just bored.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.